So I'm going to call this meeting of the House Early Learning, Early Childhood and Family Supports Committee to order for Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. And today we have on our calendar two bills that we're going to be hearing. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2259 and House Bill 2260. Zena.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, House Bill 2259 requires the Office of Child Care to complete additional record checks of applicants to the Central Background Registry. It prohibits enrollment by applicants with disqualifying condition. It eliminates requirements that enrollment in the registry expires 2 years from the date of enrollment. It directs the Early Learning Council to adopt rules on records checks and enrollment periods, declares an emergency effective on passage. There is a -3 amendment which allows the Office of Child Care to maintain information in the registry through an electronic record system. It authorizes the Office of Child Care to complete foster care certification checks and adult protective service checks. It permits the Office of Child Care to enroll an individual in the registry if the Department of Human Services has completed a background check and it has been approved. It adds that ineligible enrollees can be suspended. It requires operators or employees of early learning programs to apply for enrollment, and it requires agreements about enrollment status between private agencies and organizations, and applies retroactively to past enrollments. There is a fiscal impact issued and no revenue impact. House Bill 2260 directs the Office of Child Care to maintain a website on certified and registered child care facilities and regulated subsidy facilities. It allows the Office of Child Care to maintain information in the Central Background Registry through electronic record systems. It prohibits disclosure of identifying information of an entity or individual who makes complaints about facilities and programs unless it's necessary to the investigation. It allows the Office of Child Care to share information with other public entities when it supports the health and safety of children in care. There is a -2 amendment which updates the date and funding source. It authorizes the Office of Child Care to maintain information about child care facilities and providers through an electronic record system and to share information regarding investigations or inspections with other public entities when sharing would support the health of or safety of children. It removes the ability to share identifying information about a person that makes a complaint. There is a fiscal impact issued and no revenue impact.
Okay. Very good. So, Lisa, and whomever else you want to. Oh. How about Don? You just introduce yourselves for the record, please.
Sure. For the record, my name is Don Woods, and I'm the Child Care Director for the Early Learning Division.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, members. Lisa Pinero, I'm a policy analyst with the Early Learning Division. Don's going to go through the bills for you today, and I will address the amendments when we get to that point. And
very good.
If you don't mind, we'll start with House Bill 2260.
2260. Okay. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Chair Lively, members of the committee. House Bill 2260, and I know when I was here prior and spoke about the reauthorization of the Child Care Development Fund, this bill, parts of it help us to meet those requirements. What kind of the big overview is that in order to meet those federal requirements, we need to post our licensing documents, our reports of our licensing visits to give parents and guardians access to information to help inform their child care decisions. It's really a consumer protection component of it. We also are looking at how we provide confidentiality to individuals who make anonymous calls in, much like an individual who reports child abuse and neglect, maintaining that confidentiality so that those individuals can really help us be the eyes and ears on the ground. Additionally, we're looking at how to be able to share information more collaboratively between other agencies. Currently, we have strong relationships with child welfare, but don't have the ability to share certain information between foster care and adult and protective services. And then additionally, to really state the authority to have us look at maintaining these records electronically and just kind of an update of the statute. Lisa, do you have?
Well, I'd open up any questions on the bill.
That's right. Is there questions on the core bill by any members? Doesn't look like
okay.
It.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, as your committee administrator indicated, we do have dash two amendments to the bill. Those are just to essentially clarify some of the requirement authorities that we need in order to comply with the CCDF Act. One is the original bill allowed the division or the Office of Child Care to manage and maintain information in the central background registry in electronic means. We actually needed authority to maintain all information on child care providers through electronic means. So that's just one of the technical amendments that you'll see there. The bill is drafted, 2260 is drafted, also made revisions to ORS 329A030, which is the governing statutes for the Central Background Registry. Since that issue is being handled and managed in the other bill that you'll hear in a moment, House Bill 2259, we deleted that out of 2260. So that we didn't have two bills going simultaneously amending one section of statute. Again, it just clarified that the name, address, and other identifying information about a complainant can be held confidential within the office. And again, specifies, it just clears up some of the language about sharing information about investigations and inspections with other public entities who have a responsibility for child welfare and safety. And also just some technical changes to correct cross-references between our statutes and those statutes of the Department of Human Services.
Okay. Chair? Questions? Question. Yes, Representative Bynum, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you explain on the complaint process, once a complaint is received, what that process looks like, and if it's found to be without merit, what you do with the information, and then with a lens of social media? We dealt with the case in higher ed where a complaint was levied on a business, essentially a school, and it wasn't found to be with merit, but it got out there and it damaged the reputation of the facility. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Representative Bynum, Chair Lively. When we receive a complaint from any individual, we assess it, and we would only go out on that complaint if it's of a regulatory nature. So, for instance, we wouldn't go out on a complaint about a parent not paying for child care. It would have to be within our regulations. We go out within 3 days on all complaints and do that assessment and find it either to be valid or not able to substantiate. That does go on the individual's our record in documentation, and that's where it stays. We and parents can call for a full compliance history on all child care providers, but that's not currently posted broadly, and we do our assessment based on knowing calls can come in, and we just assess them as we see them.
Other questions? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lisa, when Megan was the director, there had been a Central Oregon situation that I brought to her attention, and it was along this line of, but it's been 2 or 3 years ago, and I don't remember the outcome, but it seemed pretty unfair, the process at the time, to leave posted almost like a guilty notice when there really wasn't a substance to the complaint. Do you remember that? And if the policy changed at all around what I had been discussing with Megan?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, I do not. I was not with the division at that time, so I would have to look to my colleague to see if she has some information about that.
We have to get back to. Representative Huffman, Chair Lively, I'm not recalling that situation. However, I do know that on our website in which complaints are put up, if they're founded, there is a place for the provider to provide some narrative information to give their perspective on what happened in that situation. But we could look into that situation and see where that falls. It's not ringing a bell to me.
If, Mr. Chair, if I recall, I think it was the Cromers. I think it was Ruth Cromer from the Bend area. And And it just there was some foundation to their argument, because Megan got back with me, but I don't remember if anything was changed, but it seemed at the time pretty unfair for just an accusation to remain posted when there was no founding to it at all after the investigation, to make it seem like they remained guilty even though they never were guilty.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative, let's look into that, and okay. We'll see what we can find in our records.
Thanks.
Representative Peck.
Thank you, Chair. So just a clarification. So is an accusation posted and left on? So is every claim posted, every accusation posted? Is there a time period they're posted and then taken off? Are they left there? How can you just clarify?
Sure. Representative Peck, Chair Lively. Currently, the only thing posted on our website is if there has been a complaint called in and we find it to be valid. So we don't post things that have not been substantiated based on our investigation. And those all began around 2004. And so with the current new federal requirement of CCDF, we do need to post our reports from all of our visits, and so there is there will be more information out there for parents to access.
Okay.
What's that? I mean, when you say all of our visits, so what's that's still about the one claim or the one accusation, or is that, I'm confused what that means if you say that information has to be posted?
Chair Lively, what we're looking at posting is, so at least once a year we go out on a monitoring visit to licensed child care providers, and so a report of those visits will be posted for parents or any other person in the general public to look at.
And so so ultimately go back to a claim that you investigated and found it to be right. I mean, there is something wrong. So what do you post? Do you post what the person says happened and then the results of that, or what ends up being public at that particular point?
Chair Lively, we post the rule that was found valid, the rule violation that was found valid, and then our licensing specialists that are out in the field write a short narrative about the finding, and then the provider has the opportunity to go in and write their own narrative about that situation.
Okay. Any other questions?
I have one more.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there any place in the reviewing of the complaint and the response for the corrective action that needed to be taken and when it was completed? So responding to a complaint is one thing, but I think as a parent looking for child care, accidents happen or mistakes happen, and in general I think most people act in good faith, but the corrective action for me as a parent is the most important thing. So like in food service, I don't know, you put the ham above the eggs or something like that. And so on a food service inspection report, it lists the violation, and then it lists the corrective action, and then it lists when the corrective action was taken and if there was any follow-up. So that's kind of what I'm asking about in this respect.
Representative Bynum, Chair Lively, we do we would write on our documentation, corrected at time of visit. Once we issue, if maybe we might issue a temporary license until the corrective action is taken, and then it would, you know, they'd get the full license once everything had been corrected. So that information is available, and on the website, in terms of the public information, we really encourage parents to call and get the full compliance, because that has that greater detail of exactly some of the, you know, situations that you were referencing to paint that full picture.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's a matter of
things. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So, Chair Lively, members of the committee, the next bill is House Bill 2259. And again, we referenced this when we did the informational testimony to you around the new
Child Care Development Fund federal requirements. And this is really looking around the requirements about the enhanced background checks. So this is looking at check state criminal and sex offender registries, check child abuse and neglect registries and other databases in states where that individual may have lived within the last 5 years, search the National Crime Information Center, the Federal Bureau of Investigation fingerprint check, as well as the National Sex Offender Registry. This new federal requirement also identifies no-never crimes in which an individual cannot work in a child care facility if they've committed one of these crimes. And so that's kind of the federal law, and the pieces of this bill is primarily to address those components. And so in order to meet those requirements, the section of the bill removes the two-year expiration and renewal requirements within our statute and gives that authority to the Early Learning Council to set those expirations and renewal dates for the Central Background Registry. And I just in terms of commenting, I think this is important to note is that currently it's 2 years and the federal requirement is 5 years. Mm-hmm. So it gives us that ability to manage any federal changes and to meet those federal intents. Additionally, it allows the Office of Child Care to fingerprint individuals based on their initial and their renewal applications to conduct the background checks. And so in the past, we fingerprinted a small portion, and now this gives us the authority that we to print all individuals. It authorizes the Early Learning Council to adopt rules to define the databases and registries within that rule, as well as it prohibits the Office of Child Care from enrolling an individual from those no-never crimes. And so that's kind of the overview. Any questions on that? And then I know Lisa has
questions
amendments.
On the core bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do have -3 amendments to the bill, and those will clarify and specify the duties and responsibilities, of the Office of Child Care. I'm going to go through this kind of section by section because they're a little more complicated than the other bill. In the amendments to Section 1, again, authorizes the Office of Child Care to maintain the information in the Central Background Registry through electronic record systems. That's so that we can comply with the federal requirements to do so. Also adds the ability for the Office of Child Care to check foster care certification checks and adult protective services checks to our background checks that we conduct. And that is to just so that we have some more, we can be a little bit more uniform with what we're hearing and what we're working with our partners at DHS on. And again, just ensures the protection, health, and safety of the children and child care. It also authorizes the Office of Child Care to limit enrollment and to suspend enrollment. And can you, I'm going to turn to my colleague so that she can describe the purposes of limited enrollment, because that's a little bit of a new concept.
Members of the committee, Chair Lively, we currently may have individuals that are part of alcohol and drug treatment programs that there's child care happens. Some of those individuals may not be typically able to enroll in our Central Background Registry because of their past. And so this gives us the ability to support them in working with their children, being in the child care facility, but within a limited capacity based on past issues that that individual may have had.
The amendments then go on. Again, as Zena pointed out, the ability to enroll an individual in the Central Background Registry and not do another background check if that individual has been completed a background check through the Department of Human Services and was approved by DHS to provide child care. This is one way of our providers don't have to go through criminal background checks. It's just one tool that we can maybe mitigate some of these impacts. Again, it gives the Early Learning Council rulemaking authority to set the expiration and renewal periods and to describe how we would limit enrollment to the CBR. And that is to give us the ability to be a little bit more nimble. If the federal government decides to change that five-year period again, we can just, we don't have to come through legislature, just change that in statute. And the, it also allows the Office of Child Care to enroll individuals, operators or employees of other early learning programs in the CBR. So it's just kind of a partnership that we might have with other units of government. So that's in Section 1. Section 2, again, these are all really just technical amendments in this section. That is to conform language in the Department of Human Services statutes so that there's corrections to the new changes that you'll be seeing in our statute. And then one of the bigger things that it does is amends the operative date of this bill so that we can be sure that we can go back and do the fingerprinting and the background checks that are required of people who are currently enrolled in the Central Background Registry. Rather than going forward from this point, from the effective date of this act, we can go retroactive and get those folks enrolled properly so we meet the CCDF requirements.
Okay. Excuse me. What question is Representative Bynum?
Sorry, I have
no,
a question.
Please, that's fine.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, so if you had, going back to the addiction parts where you were making some special accommodations, so if you had an addiction, you're not able to work in child care, or if you had a criminal conviction due to an addiction, you're not able to work in child care, or you're not allowed on the premises. Somehow I didn't comprehend.
Sure. Properly. Representative Bynum, Chair Lively, it really depends on the situation. And so there's actually a set of five factors that we use to assess suitability within the Central Background Registry. So a drug charge would not necessarily keep you out. But if that was in the presence of a child and child endangerment, that would then elevate it to a concern of suitability to be left alone with young children. If they had anything else in their past of any other type of child abuse or person-to-person, those would all be looked at and assessed to determine if they could be enrolled in our Central Background Registry. So that's where some of those limited conditions to where you can work here in this place only and not leave that treatment facility and go to work in another child care facility. We would need to do another assessment to determine that suitability.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I might add, enrollment in the Central Background Registry follows you. So if I were to be enrolled in the Central Background Registry and I could work in a child care facility here in Salem, that register, that enrollment applies if I wanted to work in another facility.
Correct.
So what we're also saying in terms of potentially limiting that is, yes, Lisa, you're enrolled in the Central Background Registry, but only for that facility. You can't take it with you and work at a different facility. So those are the types of limitations that we want to be able to create for our providers so that there's some flexibility for them, but we're continuing to ensure the safety of children.
I guess my thought process is, because we treat addictions as crimes and not treat them as mental illnesses, I just want to kind of open our thought process about how we block people off from becoming full-fledged citizens participating in society because of addictions. Not that we ever want to put children at risk. Ever. But we still have work to do in making sure that we do our best to manage addictions properly so we don't have to end up with kids at risk. So that's where my thinking is. So,
Chair Lively, may I?
Sure.
I really hear what you're saying in terms of that process, and that's why that suitability is really critical, that it would not be a drug charge that would necessarily keep you out in and of itself. We may ask for documentation that you've completed treatment for that issue, and then that would all be taken into account. And so just from my own personal experience of staffing, that's not a limiting factor in and of itself.
Thank you.
Other questions? So I have a question. So both of these bills have a fiscal. So these bills are trying to bring us current or in compliance with federal regulations and that. And we're in an interesting fiscal environment. And so I'm just trying to understand if this committee passes them and moves them to Ways and Means, which is the only thing we can do, and somehow in that Ways and Means process, the POP, the recommendation, is not approved. What happens? So where does that leave us this on the compliance side of this? I mean, we'd have adopted the policies, but we couldn't necessarily do the full implementation. I'm trying to understand the link between those two and how they would be viewed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, the Department of Education budget has a policy option package to do a couple things. Essentially, what we're doing is the policy option package provides us the expenditure limitation for the increase in fees for, because we're going to be doing a whole lot more criminal background checks. So we're going to be getting that. So we have the expenditure limitation. The fiscal impact is not necessarily as a result of the legislation. Yeah. It is a result of the federal legislation. So it's kind of a tricky and interesting dynamic here. So we did submit a minimal fiscal on 2259 because of the policy option package to signal that we're requesting the authority to expend those funds. We submitted a non-fiscal on House Bill 2260 to Legislative Fiscal Office, and because of the connection in the two, they determined that there was, in fact, a fiscal. So I have not yet seen LFO's fiscal impact statement. I understood that it hadn't been released as of mid-morning, so I have not seen it yet. But to your question, Mr. Chair, I don't know what would happen.
But the reality is the authorization to spend is monies that are fees that would be collected to pay for the services. And so, yeah.
Yes.
David, do you have? Sure.
Yes,
but you haven't been up here yet today. Yes.
And spreading the wealth.
Yeah.
And basically, if the policy committee, if there's a referral to Ways and Means, and it'll die in Ways and Means if it doesn't pass out there or so.
Right. But the question then becomes back to the whole compliance with or bringing in compliance with the federal government, those regulations. I'm just trying to.
So, Chair Lively, committee, I just wanted to sort of clarify.
David, your name.
Excuse me. For the record, David Mandel, Acting Early Learning System Director.
Thank you.
I just wanted to clarify that the fiscal does not involve any general fund ask at this point.
Right.
So there's two components of it. One is the other fund authority to collect those fees, and then we are also asking for some shifting of child care development fund dollars in order to pay for the implementation costs. So I just wanted to clarify that. So it does have a fiscal, but it's generally general fund neutral.
So the fiscal has been put up in OLIS. People have not. The fiscal is for both, and it does also state that further analysis is required. But at least the statement, and the statement does what you talked about, link them both to that POP and that. So, any other questions you ever have about these bills? Okay.
Right.
Thank you very much. Anyone else who hasn't signed up that wishes to testify on House Bill 2259 or 2260? Okay. I'm going to close the hearings. Okay, and I'm going to, if we're ready, I'll open the work session and we can move these forward.
No, I don't know that we've ever done this in this committee.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I want it before I hit the gavel.
Don't mess it up.
Oh, that's right.
Ignore this.
Oh, that's right.
Please,
yeah,
Mr.
Yeah.
Chair.
I wasn't trying to be funny. I really wasn't. I completely forgot about that.
So I'm going to open the work session first on House Bill 2259. And so we have an amendment first.
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the -3 amendments dated 3-9 of 17.
Thank you. Representative Peluso moves to adopt the -3 amendments to House Bill 2259, dated 3-9-17. Is there any discussion of the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Okay. If there's no objection, well, I guess we're calling the roll. Excuse me, clerk. I'll take that back. So you can go ahead and call the roll.
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Elfman?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Malmstrom?
Aye.
Representative Brock Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hack?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. So the amendments have been adopted. So now the only question I have before we move this. So at this point, we have authority to move it to Ways and Means?
Yes, okay. Mr. Chair.
Because I know there's some question about what we can or can't. So I just wanted to make sure.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2259 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Peluso moves House Bill 2259 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, if you call the roll, please.
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Hoffman?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Malmstrom?
Aye.
Representative Brock Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hack?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. So the bill as amended is on its way to the Committee on Ways and Means. So now we're open the work session on House Bill 2260. Do we have a dash two amendment?
Chair Lively, I move to adopt the dash two amendment dated 3/3/17.
Representative Peluso moves to adopt the dash two amendment dated 3/3/17 to House Bill 2260. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, if you'd call the roll, please.
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Malmstrom?
Aye.
Representative Brock Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hack?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. Motion carries. Amendment's adopted. Representative Peluso.
Chair Lively, I move House Bill 2260 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Peluso moves House Bill 2260 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Bynum?
Aye.
Representative Hayden?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Malmstrom?
Aye.
Representative Brock Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hack?
Aye.
Vice Chair Peluso?
Aye.
Chair Lively?
Aye. The motion passes. The bill is as approved, as amended, will be on its way to Ways and Means. So I'll close the work session on House Bill 2260. Do we have any other items of business today? Anything for the good of the order? I hate to let you out this early.
I can get so much more work done.
Okay. If there's no other business. Okay.